This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is The Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. We have a very special edition today. My co-host this week is Dr. Ian Fernander, who is a business consultant, amongst many other things. Good evening, Mr. Well, he likes to say Mr., but he's Dr. Ian Fernander.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone.
And our special guest, a household name, not just in the Bahamas, but internationally, is Pastor Dr. Dave Burrows. He's a senior pastor of Bahamas Faith Ministries Church, and he's also the president of the Bahamas Faith Ministries International, which is a nonprofit organization. Welcome, Dr. Pastor Dave Burrows.
Pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be here.
All right, so we're here trying to uplift the nation. Start with a few inspirational words. Scripture tells us in Romans 8:31 that if God is for us, then who could possibly be against us? Which means that when you have your back against the wall, when you feel like there's nowhere to go and no place to turn to for help, when you feel like there are no options left, when you feel defeated and devoid of hope altogether, when you feel isolated and abandoned, when you feel like there is no way forward, you must always remember the covenant, faithfulness of the God you serve. You must remember that all the ways that God has protected you in the past and in the present and continues to protect you. So it's you always have to have in your heart that with God, you can get through and overcome the worst of moments and endure the greatest of tragedies. I'll start with you, Pastor Dave Burrows. I know Dr. Ian Fernander has a lot of thought-provoking topics to get into, but I'll start with this. The average Bahamian man internalizes his stress. He's taught from his younger years that he should never show any emotion, that he should never seek help for his pain, so he internalizes it. He usually seeks comfort, unfortunately, with alcohol or if it's and or drugs, illicit or even legal drugs. He may seek joy in womanizing or if he's a married man in sweethearting and gambling. But rarely does a typical Bahamian man seek solace in God or in the fellowship of the church. How do we change the mindset of the average Bahamian man who's hurting right now?
Well, I think it comes down to one simple thing that is not so simple, and that's understanding the difference between living by instinct versus living by purpose. Man is the only creature that operates in the sovereign class, which means capable of self-rule. Every other creature lives by instinct. So a dog wakes up in the morning, a dog doesn't have an agenda. He doesn't have a process that he goes through in relating to other dogs. He just reacts instinctively. The problem is that man was not designed to live by instinct. So whenever man lives by instinct, it's automatic problems because you live in outside of your design. And what we see is a lot of young men don't know who they are. They don't know where they're going. So they're living by instinct. You know, when you think about it, if you wake up in the morning and you say, okay, tonight I'm going to go out, and I'm just going to go out to the clubs, and I'm just going to find a woman to have sex with. That's instinct. So you're just looking at who looks good, how can I have a good time. There's no purpose involved in it. And as Dr. Monroe used to say, where purpose is not known, abuse is inevitable. So what happens is that we have a lot of young men in the country who are not living by purpose. And so it's just perpetual abuse.
Yeah, we have a very aimless society of young men. I think you'd agree, Dr. Ian Fernandez, you've worked with many of them. They have no guidance.
Some.
When we... some. Yeah, well, we're talking broadly. Obviously, there are many that who don't have any serious vices and are living a positive life and are uplifting the community and their families, etc. But for the average Bahamian man, you ask them to have a 10-year goal. What is life going to be like in 15 years, 20 years? They don't even care about what they're going to do tomorrow. They're living for the moment.
Yeah.
They don't realize that there are consequences, that not using a condom has consequences. You're going to have a child you're burdened with and further burdened in society. You may have a sexually transmitted disease, might be HIV, might be herpes, might be hepatitis, which can cost you your life and change the trajectory of your life forever. It can cause, from a urologist's point of view, you can develop urethral strictures. Hepatitis can lead to liver cancer, can kill you even quicker than HIV. If you have a sexually transmitted disease, it increases your risk of prostate cancer, and we're already at high risk as a nation for prostate cancer. But how do we tell men that there is a brighter tomorrow, that to believe in themselves, that not enough men believe in education? They don't understand that education can change their future, change the future of their parents, their mother, their grandmother, their younger siblings. It can create a brighter tomorrow. I've seen the world because of education. I've experienced, I've lived in countries all over the world because of education, because of dedication, because my parents instilled in that in me, and my grandparents instilled that in them, and myself and my sister and brother as well. But for a lot of men who may not even know their father, you know, as a young boy, as a teenager, hardly see their mother because their mother's working 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
They're raising themselves. There's a issue with gangs that I would like to get into as well.
Yes.
You weren't born with God in your heart. You are very open and vocal about your path to God. You had your own trials and tribulations, and I think that actually inspires a lot of young men to know that we're from where you came from. You made a lot of bad decisions that you've overcome. Can you speak a little bit of that to try to create some inspiration for those who don't see a brighter tomorrow?
Absolutely. I think one of the problems is that you tend to be what you see. So whatever is popular in your environment, that's what young men are attracted to. And even though I grew up in a decent home, you know, we weren't poor, we weren't from the ghetto, none of those issues, I just got attracted to what I saw around me. So I saw drug dealers, I saw guys from the streets, and that was the popular culture. And as a man, you know, all of us want to be recognized as a man. And I heard a saying one time, it said, animals risk their lives for food, but humans will risk their lives for acceptance. And so, like many young men, I went on a journey of acceptance, you know. So I came from a decent home. You know, my father owned a grocery store. But I ended up, you know, in the hood. I ended up on the streets, you know, involved in all kinds of things. I mean, by the time as I was 16, I would have been involved in at least 3 police chases. You know, I face all kinds of trials, not only here in the Bahamas, but in the U.S. I almost got deported from the U.S. while I was in college because actually the police was looking at what they were looking for me at the time for some things that me and a friend, we got involved in. So, you know, I had a rough early teenage years, into college, into the early college years, just lost, you know, living by instinct, you know, all of the things that I talk about, when you talk about living by instinct, you know, it was just woman after woman, party after party, you know, just when I was 16 years old, because of the business that I was in, I was generating income. It was not a legal business, but I was generating income. I would go to Miami by myself, 16 years old, ran a hotel, go party on South Beach, go to the strip club, do all kinds of stuff, and then just come back home, you know? So I was living lost, and it created a lot of problems for me. You know, it created a lot of problems, all kinds of situations. You know, I've been in situations where somebody ran behind me with a shotgun. I remember I was on Wolf Road, and somebody was firing a gun at me, and I didn't realize it was a gun. I thought it was a firecracker. Until I saw the fire from the gun, and I still didn't know it was a gun at the time, until I saw everybody around me jumping over the wall. So, you know, I've been through a lot of different scrapes, a lot of different situations. But fortunately, you know, it all turned around. In my second year of college, I ended up going to a school that my sister was attending. So the school was All Roberts University. So my sister was attending this college, and she said to me, why don't you come here? Because, you know, it'll help you stay out of trouble, because this is a different environment. It's more positive and so on. And they had a really good basketball team. I was a basketball player. And she, you know, invited me to come, and I ended up going. And that's where my life changed. It didn't change necessarily because of the school. It changed because I ran into somebody who was a role model. You know, when I said, you'll be what you see. So her husband was also a basketball player. And so we used to play basketball together. And after we finished playing basketball together, he used to go to these Bible studies. And he said, why don't you come to go with me to Bible study? Now, he didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he didn't party, so we had nothing in common. But he was a good basketball player, and you know, his life seemed to be going in the right direction. And so I was hanging around with him going to these Bible studies. And after a period of time of watching his life and hearing, you know, stories from other people, I ended up going to church with him. And, you know, that was the beginning of a drastic change for me. So my life completely changed. I was able to graduate. I stopped getting in trouble. No more issues with the police. No more issues with, you know, violence, any of those kinds of things. And then I began, when I came back home to Nassau, to reach out to young men from the streets. So I actually went into some of the schools and spoke to the guidance counselors, because we had a gang problem that was burgeoning at the time. And I said to the guidance counselors, I said, look, just give me the gang members, I'll talk to them. And so I had a class of gang members every week.
Wow.
And I would talk to them, play basketball with them. I brought them to church, and I developed a relationship. And many of them, they ended up changing their lives. Today, some of them, husbands, fathers, pastors, and so on. And then later on, I teamed up, Carlos Reed and I and a few others. We did something called Peace on the Streets, where we went into all of the gang-infested neighborhoods and just shared the gospel in music and testimonies. And we saw, in 1 year, I think like over 1,000 gang members changed their lives. At the time, the prime minister was Hubert Ingraham. He called me to cabinet, and he said, look, you know, what you're doing, I think it was Algernon Allen introduced what we were doing and brought us to cabinet. And so the prime minister and the cabinet said, look, we'll pay you for what you do, because, you know, it's just amazing that so many of these young men are turning around. And so we started a program called Operation Redemption, where we had a car wash and a couple other things, where we took gang members who had changed their lives, and we gave them jobs, mentored them, and then put them in the workplace. We made a connection with different businesses, and we began to work. And a lot of those young men today, we also taught them how to start businesses and become successful in business. And so a lot of those young men today are pillars in society. You know, one of them is a pastor of two of our churches. Another one, he has a radio program in 90 countries, a television program in 25 countries, and he's a recording artist. He's a businessman. His wife is a bank manager, and he travels around the world. Another one still lives in the ghetto, but he started a business, and he invested in the ghetto. So he bought properties, and today he's a property owner. He's a businessman. He has his own engineering business. So, you know, we have seen a lot of young men turn their lives around if they have an example to follow and if they are exposed to the right information. The problem that we have in the Bahamas is that most young men are not exposed to positive role models. So they just end up following what they see. And unfortunately, the culture is pretty much a negative culture for young men.
But as you've said, you're the perfect example of one light in the darkness, and you've changed tens of thousands of lives. I can only imagine if you hadn't turned your life around, you may not even be alive.
That's true.
You may have ended up in prison, but you've impacted so many persons, so many families, the community, not just this country, throughout the world,
yes.
The continents of the world. So God had a purpose for you, and God has a purpose for us all. So I think you are inspiring, and I think the fact that you travel those roads that a lot of these young men you're trying to reach out to, you can reach out to them on their level, and you can understand where they came from. And I think you understand that even with all the money you had, all the women, all the drugs, all the alcohol, all the materialism, it was still a very empty life, a very shallow life. And a life without purpose.
Absolutely.
What is your comment, Dr. Ian Fernando?
Well, I actually have a question. I'm interested in understanding a bit more, and this is also for the persons listening. What is purpose? How does one get to that? Is that something that somebody delivers to you and tell you what that is? Or is it something that you just discover and find yourself? Or is it something that is there inside of you, and you only meet it if you're in a certain context? What is purpose? What is that?
Well, I always say this, you know, every product has a designer, and the purpose is in the mind of the designer or the creator. And so when we understand that God made us, he had a design for us, and we have to discover that design. And inside of all of us, there are purpose indicators. So let's say, for example, a bird has wings. So that's an indication that it's supposed to fly. Inside of all of us, there's something that God put in us that we are supposed to pursue. If you take someone like Usain Bolt, part of his purpose indicators is he's supposed to run because he had some things built in. And it may be other things. It may be some... You know, you may have a friendly personality. Well, that might be an indicator that you are supposed to be in a people-serving business or function. So I think we all have to find out what it is that God deposited in us that will allow us to fulfill our destiny.
So how do you walk a young man through the confusion where he feels that, hey, I'm running the streets, so I'm doing what society says is something negative, but I feel in my heart that that's what I'm here to do. Because you get that sometimes. Hey, well, this me, that's this is what I'm all about.
Not really.
How do you walk them away from that conception that something that they think is their purpose really is not? How do you get them to see what purpose really is?
Well, interestingly enough, what I find is that most men who are on the streets doing a lot of negative things, they don't believe that's where they're supposed to be. Every prison that I've been to in the Bahamas, the United States, Africa, wherever I've been, I have never met one person who said, when I was a young person, I said, when I grow up, I want to go to jail. And most people who do crime, who do drugs, they don't ask for the consequences. So they live on instinct. And they say, well, okay, I want to get high, I want to feel good. But there's no thought about, okay, I could possibly get addicted. So when you live on instinct, you don't think about purpose. But when you discover purpose, then before you act, you start to think, you know, is this going to take me to my destiny? And that's what I try to tell young people, especially young men. I said, you know, where do you want to be 20 years from now? If you don't know, you need to write it down. And then some of them say, well, you know, I don't know. I say, well, okay, what are you passionate about? What are you concerned? What causes you, what drives you? So, you know, I met a guy one time and he said, I want to be a pilot. I like to fly. I mean, he didn't have any experience flying. So I said, okay, that's a purpose indicator. If you develop that talent, that will pay you money and that will help you get to your destiny. But what happens is that out of ignorance, we do things that take us nowhere. And so we have a plethora of young men today who are just living aimlessly, and it's almost like they're all marching toward the grave. And when you talk to them, very few said, okay, I want to die. But then they realize, well, what I'm doing, I'll probably be dead. Mm-hmm. So they just living on instinct, not understanding their purpose. And I think we have to put them in environments to remind them about purpose. I think they have to see examples too. Because what happens is that when people see an example, it inspires them. So I was in Atlanta. I was doing an event in Atlanta, and a lady came up to me, and she said to me, she said, Pastor Burroughs, do you remember me? And I said, well, I remember your face, but I don't remember. She said, you sent a book. You replied to my son who was in prison, and you sent him a book on the power of positive choices. She said, I just want you to know that he came out of prison, turned his life around, and that book was the inspiration for his change. You know, so it was him hearing about my story and seeing my turnaround that caused him to think, well, you know, I can do it. And I think that's one of the underrated aspects of what can happen in the Bahamas. And it's one of the reasons why I wrote a book called Reaching the Streets, and I'm about to launch another book. And this book is I want to go in the hands of young men. It's called Leaving the Streets. So how do you get out of this life? And in this book, I talk to many, many young men who have made it out, and we talk about how. And so I think young people need stories of inspiration. They need to see something positive. They need to see possibilities. Well, and they see possibilities, it makes a difference.
Pastor Dave Burroughs, what would you think of when I make the statement that we have a generation, a lost generation of Bahamian men, that Bahamian men are in crisis? Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. You know, I'm on the ground. I'm not on the ground the way I used to be, you know, because I was on the streets all the time talking to young men. But I still have a connection to a lot of young men. And I just did a seminar recently with a group of young men who would be considered troubled. And as I sat in that room and I talked to them and everything, you know, it just, what came to my mind is there's really a lost generation. You know, it's rough. It's rough out there.
And you've authored, is it 24 books?
24 books, yeah.
But the typical Bohemian young man does not read. So all of your inspirational words and tales and uplifting stories are not going to reach them, unfortunately. How do we, obviously you want to reach out to as many people. This is a wonderful medium. Obviously you try to preach to as many persons who, again, we'll say a lot of young men don't even go to church. Mm-hmm. So how do you reach out to those people other than going on the streets?
You know what's amazing? This really blew my mind. Everywhere that I've gone and I've talked to troubled young men and I've offered my book, they all asked for the book. So the same group that I was talking to, there was a group from the Simpson Pen boys who were incarcerated. I went with just a few books, and I didn't have enough. And they all asked me for the book. And so I had to send a case of books back. I was in Jamaica a few years ago. And in Jamaica, the Ministry of National Security brought me in to talk to the young men. They were doing a special program. And my job was to talk to what they call the gunmen. So these are Jamaican guys from different gangs. And I was in this event, and there's maybe 300 gunmen from the streets. And I told them my story, and I only brought a few of my books. I'm thinking the same thing you think. I'm thinking, well, these guys ain't gonna read the book or whatever. I had to send cases of the books back to Jamaica because they all wanted it. And so it's just amazing that people are interested in stories of redemption. You know, in most places that I go, I show a picture of me when I was on the streets, and then I show a picture of me now. And then I don't tell them that the picture of me, I'm gonna bring it up so you can see it in a minute. I don't tell them that the picture that I'm showing is me, and they all go into shock. But you know, it's amazing. I don't know. You know, my thought was that these guys can't read, and you know, so on. But they apparently they can read, you know, and a lot of them are interested. And I what I started doing is globally now, I just give away the books. I meet young men and I give away the books and they read it, you know?
Well, I think one of the downfalls of our society, and I don't think it's really up for much debate, is that we are a materialistic society, and we're a society that wants everything right away. Mm-hmm. We don't want to sacrifice. We don't want to endeavor over the years and work to get up to the mountaintop. We want everything right away. How do you get that? Crime. How do you get that? Stealing. If you like something, just steal it. If drugs will get you there very quickly, but what's the life expectancy of a drug dealer? And then the problem with a lot of our society that drug dealers are held in the highest of regard.
Absolutely.
Even more so than an educated person. So you'll have one 21-year-old who just graduated from college, and the next one is one of the biggest drug dealers in the country. And it's going to be the biggest drug dealer who's going to have all the women, all the prestige, all the respect, even from the older persons in the community. But when you do it the right way in this country, you're not respected. And that's a crying shame.
And I think that's on us because we allow the negative narrative to pervade. So what we need to do is we need to highlight the positive stories. We also need to highlight stories like mine. And I work with a group of young men who have all changed their lives and are doing fantastic. But you never hear about it. But, and I think
but,
we have to.
But how does that happen though? Because one of my complaints about storytelling in this country is just what you just said. Whether it's the media or anybody else, they will tell you that positive does not sell. I don't quite believe that, but that's what you get. You will not see a front page story that says gang leader turns his life around. It'll never happen. It won't even be on page 5. It won't be in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But the minute a gang leader gets shot, it's on the front page. And our media will tell you that they cover what sells, as opposed to saying we cover what is worthy. They cover bad news because it sells. So how do you think we take out the negativity out of our conversation and add positivity in the broad sense in a country that is, you know, we get off on bad news?
Yeah, I think it has to be a concerted effort, and it has to be a national effort. I've been around journalism a long time, and I remember they used to have a saying. They say, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, that's the reality.
Yeah.
And in order for that to change, we have to have people who are in ownership of media or who are regulating media that ensures that the other side of it is presented. And, you know, it's going to take national leadership to do that. You know, that has to be a part of the platform of the parties that are coming in, that we're going to change what young people are exposed to. Because if we don't change what they're exposed to, they're going to be what they're exposed to. So if we want better, we have to show them better, and they have to be exposed to better. You know?
Yeah, because it's a bit counterproductive that to make the newspaper as a young man, you got to do something bad.
Yeah, yeah.
it's a crying shame because they're young men, and obviously the women are doing great, great things. But there's so many young men who are doing wonderful things locally, internationally, and you hardly hear anything about it. There might be a little blurb about them in the back page. But let their classmate go and rob somebody in broad daylight. They'll be in the front page news. They'll be all over the television, et cetera, et cetera. We like the sensationalism. We like the negativity. And then that perpetuates it. All we do is see negative, negative, negative. This one getting shot. It feels strange now if it goes 3 days and someone hasn't been shot in a driveway by shooting. And yeah, that's a horrible indictment in our own society and where we're headed.
We incentivize bad behavior. You know, I mean, we may be doing it unintentionally, but that's what's happening. You know, if the student of the year doesn't make the front page, but then the criminal of the year makes the front page, then we are incentivizing
the criminal of the hour.
Of the hour, yeah. And the criminals can make they can make multiple appearances on the front page, on the news, you know.
You know, it's very sad. And then we've spoken about this in the past, and I think that it's destroying our country, and that's brain drain. Yeah. Even when we have success stories, when we lead someone down the right path and they've achieved greatness, even when all the odds were against them, the vast majority of them are not coming back to our society. They're enriching and empowering and doing great things for other countries.
Mm-hmm.
How do we stop that? How do we stop that? Because we can put all our effort into creating the next leader, potential leader of our country, or potential youth leader, or church leader, or business leader, or someone who's going to start a new industry and create hundreds of jobs in our society. But because it's such an unwelcome environment in our society where there's that black crab syndrome, where we hate our own, where we don't want to see our own success. That's why we spend hundreds of millions of dollars on foreign consultants, mm-hmm. because we always think foreign is better.
Yeah.
Because we have no problem giving the money to a foreigner who will take the money out the country. But to see our own neighbors, our own church members, our own family or supposed friends getting the money to do the same work and we're just as qualified, there's going to be a lot of hate. This mm-hmm. is a haterism society, and that's sad. Yeah. And the next question I'll have, and it's not a fair one, everyone will say that the Bahamas is a Christian nation. is it truly a Christian nation when you look at the level of crime, the level of sexual abuse, even from leaders within the church themselves? Mm-hmm. What is going on with our country? Are we truly a Christian nation?
Well, we're not a Christian nation. We are nominally a Christian nation, but in practice, definitely not, you know. And, you know, Jesus made a statement. He said, you will know people by their fruit. You can't say you're a Christian nation and then you don't act consistently in a Christian manner. I mean, we consistently act the opposite of what, you know, it would be considered Christian behavior. So from that perspective, you know, I mean, it's a good thing that we are still nominally a Christian native and people respect God and so on. But we need to have more substance when it comes to our actual day-to-day behavior and lifestyle.
So how do you get that? Hmm? How do you get there?
Well, you know, you have voices crying in the wilderness. You know, one of the things that I do on a regular basis is I try to inspire people. I try to encourage people. I use my life as an example. And, you know, you have to take advantage of the opportunities. So I constantly, every week at church, every opportunity, I was on a radio show yesterday, and I keep bringing the same message. And I think we just need more messengers, you know, and more messengers who have the credibility of living their message. And the more persons that we have who are doing that, the greater the impact.
But in our society, you've been a very successful on many levels, even as an author, as a businessman, as a leader internationally and locally. Don't you feel, from certain sectors of our society, a level of rising hate and envy and jealousy? We have a very jealous society.
Absolutely. You know, somebody said this to me a few days ago, and they said, boy, Pastor Dave, I see you doing all these kinds of things in the world. How come the Bahamas doesn't appreciate you? And that's a fair subject, you know. And sometimes I don't know exactly the reason why, but I told them that I make myself available. I have served various administrations whenever they have requested. But if people don't ask for me in the Bahamas, but they ask for me in Nigeria, I'm going to go to Nigeria, you know, and that's the reality. And the level of appreciation that I get globally is a lot higher than I get in the Bahamas.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I guess from the words of Jesus, he said, the prophet is not accepted in their own hometown, you know.
And how do we change that mindset? How do we embrace success? Because it breeds success.
I'm going to pitch in here because we have a pastor in the house, and one of my favorite parts of the Bible is where it talks about love, and there's a passage that talks about loving yourself, loving your neighbor as yourself, mm-hmm. and loving God, and I think that one emblem of love is self-respect. And if you love yourself, you can love somebody else.
Right.
And a lot of love is missing in our society. People believe that love is fixing yourself up and doing all sorts of things, but they miss the self-respect. They miss the fact that you treat your neighbor the way you treat yourself and so forth and so on. I think a lot of that is missing. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to hate someone if you hate yourself.
Right, right.
And misery loves company.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, I think a lot of people, they chase the accessories of life instead of the essence of life. You know, I don't know if you heard the saying before. It says, you don't need things to enjoy life. You need life to enjoy things. And a lot of people are not comfortable with themselves, and they are focused on what other people are doing. So I was doing a sermon on Sunday, and I was talking about the parable of the talents. And you had
One had one talent, two talents, and five talents.
I love that.
The ones who had the two and five, they were focused in on developing what they had. Mm-hmm. The one who had the one talent, he was focusing in on the others and what they got and what he didn't get. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't develop what he had. And that's what happens to a lot of us. We are envious of what other people have, and then we don't take advantage of what we have and develop what we have, you know?
Well, I'll make the statement that life without God is a life filled with fear. Life with God is a life filled with peace. But how do you reach out to a 12-year-old young man who was molested by a neighbor and by an uncle whose mother died of breast cancer, and he was saddled with a grandmother who beats him mercilessly and basically raised him to have no self-worth, never knew his father. The only love he's ever experienced is that, and acceptance is from the gang in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Are you going to just tell him gangs are wrong? And it's hard to reach out to someone who doesn't know love, doesn't know acceptance, has no inner peace, has no purpose or sees no future in life. And the gang is the only thing that, they've never been hugged by anyone. Mm-hmm. They've never had anyone show them any love. But the gang is there to embrace him, to protect him, and to give them solace and some element of peace.
Well, I'll tell you what worked for me. There are two elements, inspiration and mentorship. So, you know, you can inspire people to change, but if you don't have a relationship with them to help them through the process, a lot of guys that I work with, you know, they made a change initially, but, you know, I didn't have access to them on a regular basis, and so they were victims of the environment. You know, there was a young man I was working with one time, and he had gotten out of the gang, and he had stopped using drugs. And then he came back to me. He said, "Man, Pastor Dave." So I went home, and I told my daddy that, you know, I'm not using drugs anymore. Say, my daddy laughed at me and say, "What happened? You going soft?" Say, "Man, let's roll up this joint and smoke." So the daddy, you know, was also gang affiliated and so on. And he tell the son, "Man, you know, don't fool with that church thing. Let's go smoke." So we have to have mentorship relationships where the person that inspires the young man or someone similar can help to guide them through the process. Because if you've been through trauma, just a speech isn't going to fix that. A speech or an encounter may help to launch change, but it won't sustain change. So we have to have mentorship relationships. And what happened is that over the years, we have less mentorship in the Bahamas than we ever had. So, you know, I know when I was growing up, you had the Boy Scouts, the Boys Brigades, you had all of these mentorship groups where young men built relationships with older men, and these older men helped to guide them through the process. But now, you know, you don't have the Boys Brigade, you have the Dirty South, you know, or you have the Crack Nation or One Order. And these are the youth organizations.
And I mean, we're at the mercy of the crime in our society as well. When it gets dark by 6:30, the average mother is not going to want their 12-year-old boy or girl walking home from after-school activities. So yeah. Safety comes first. So that in itself is a tragedy. Maybe in years ago, obviously we had crime, but for the most part, you felt like your child can walk home at 7 p.m. after they were in Boys Brigade or they in participating in after-school sports. But now you want to batten down your child as soon as it's dark.
That's a reality. I think one thing that I saw that was positive is that the urban renewal centers, where they have police supervision and so on, I think that's been a positive opportunity because I've done work with Urban Renewal, and they are able to provide a kind of a safe environment for young people. So that's been a good program in some respects, that in my encounters with it, you know. And I think that's the type of thing that we have. So we have to figure out ways to get young people into a safe environment, and urban renewal is one of those things. What I've also found, and this is interesting, is that even in churches, so, you know, I used to bring in a lot of young men at the time to my church from different environments. But now you even have to be careful if you pick up some kids from Camp Road and then you pick up some kids from Pinewood and you bring them together, then that's a different, you know, different issue. So that safety issue and the issue of providing a positive environment for kids to grow in is a very relevant issue.
And I think we always have to look at what is the purpose of life. A lot of persons don't have purpose. If you look at it this way, life, I've heard that before, is like a grain of sand, and heaven or hell is an eternal desert. So if you look at it this way, 100 years from now, basically everybody on this earth is going to be dead.
Absolutely.
So why are we living our life trying to impress others? Why don't we look for inner fulfillment and trying to be positive and leave a legacy of positivity? When we're on our deathbed, no one's thinking about how much we have in the bank,
yeah,
or how many cars we have, or how many women we bedded. We're going to be thinking about what we've done in terms of providing a better life for our wife or our children or our grandchildren. All that materialism means nothing, absolutely nothing.
I'll tell you something, and a lot of people in the Bahamas may or may not know this, but I tell you, the power of the gospel is amazing. Everywhere I go in the world, somebody has a story, and I mean just multiple people all over the world, everywhere I go, of a message from Dr. Miles Monroe or myself that changed their life. I'll tell you, one time I was in Mandela Square in South Africa. My wife and I, we were walking to the mall there, and this guy starts following me. And I say to my wife, I said, somebody's following us. And so the guy comes to me and he taps me on the shoulder. And I'm like, why is this guy following me? Why are he tapping me on my shoulder? And I know, you know, in particularly in Santon, sometimes you have scammers and you got, you know, different people. So I'm thinking to myself, what in the world is this guy? So I said, you know, can I help you? And so he looked at me and he said, are you Dave Burrows? So I said, yeah, yeah. So I was like, how do you know me? He said, man, I saw you on YouTube and I heard about your story. He said, I was also in a gang. And he said, but today, your story inspired me to change. And he said, I own a publishing company. Mm-hmm. You know, and it tells you that it's possible, you know, that we need to inspire people. People need to understand that there's hope. And if you don't offer hope, then you kind of offer fatalism. And that's what's happening with a lot of our young people today. They don't have hope, so they just fatalistic, you know?
And you said it's environment as well. And we have terrible environments. Some of our parents are the worst. Yeah. It's better not to have a parent than to have a father who, as you said, encourages you to go in a gang, or a mother who encourages you to go and steal and pillage and reaps the rewards of all the stolen items and everything else. The newest thing, and I've heard, I know many police, is that they recruit young persons who have no criminal record to break into homes, to break into cars, to steal cars so they can go and drive-by shootings. And when you have a 12-year-old who is forced into that life, what is their future? And that's the life of so many behemoths.
It's rough. You need more messengers. You need more workers. It's just like the Bible says, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. What I find is that most Bahamians are not willing to do something. They're willing to say something, but they're not willing to do something. So you have a lot of churches in the Bahamas, for example, that could use persons who can work with young people. But in a lot of churches, you have people go to church every week, but they don't serve. They don't do anything. They don't give back. And I think everybody who goes to a church should either serve or give to somebody who's serving. You know, so I know I've had people who say to me, they say, Pastor Dave, I like what you're doing. Here's some money. This will help you with your program or whatever it is. And then I've had other people who say to me, how can I get involved? And so I find a place for them. And a lot of times people feel like service is outside of their scope. I remember I was talking to a pastor, and he was saying that some of his members said, well, we would like to help, but we're scared, we're afraid. And that's a reality. So one of the things that I've done in the last few years is I've developed a program where I train people how to reach young people. See, a lot of people don't know how to talk to young people. They don't know how to engage young people. One of the things, and I did this in Turks and Caicos Island. Turks and Caicos, they paid me as a consultant to train 1,000 of their people on strategies. So I'll give you an example. A lot of us, we are afraid the minute somebody says that they are a gang member. And so you are afraid to approach this person. But I tell people, I said, look, you have to understand that if somebody is a gang member, they are actually two people. And you have to know which one to approach. So you'll have a son, and he's a terrible guy on the streets. His nickname is Scarface. When you talk to his mother said he's a good boy. And then we think she's lying. She doesn't know Scarface. She knows Junior. And so when we are trying to reach young men, you don't try to reach Scarface. You try to talk to Junior. And see, Junior is no different from all of us. But when Junior leaves the house, if he is not Scarface, then he's dead. So he has to be Scarface. You know, and, you know, I've found... some of my methodologies are strange to a lot of people. But, you know, there were times when I had a Christmas dinner. And at my Christmas dinner, I had six gang members. And the host of the Christmas dinner would happen to be my in-laws at the time. They had no idea who these guys were. And they were talking about how mannerly the guys were and how, you know, these nice young men. And then it was later on, I tell them, well, you know, that's so-and-so from this gang and that's so-and-so from that gang. So when you get to talk to people and you build a relationship, everybody is the same. We all have aspirations. We have goals. These guys don't want to die. They don't want to go to jail. But the culture, the environment, and the lack of access to positive information and role models puts them in a corner where they live the persona rather than they really living who they really are.
I mean, the issues in our society in regards to young men and the future and the crisis we're facing is a very complex one. We are interwoven with what is happening in the South in Haiti, where there's an influx of immigrants all the time, where we're overwhelmed with the immigration problem from many countries, but primarily from Haiti. And that means a lot of young men. I saw a documentary recently, and it shocked me in regards to the amount of degradation and the lack of respect for human life in Haiti and how the gangs are openly raping persons, young and old women, where they're recruiting 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, putting a gun in their hand and forcing them to go and kill other people on the streets. And some of these people get on a boat and they enter the Bahamian waters and they become part of our Bahamian society. That anger, that lack of respect for human life, and they come here not accepted. Obviously, they feel that they're not a part of the Bahamian society and they're running from immigration, they're running from police. They're always on the outskirts. How do we improve our future of our society when we have all this influx from Haiti? And if we look at it, and I look at statistics, and I've spoken with many assistant commissioners and police, a large number of the crimes that are committed, we'll see the names and they'll say, okay, John Bow or Marlon Johnson. These are names that were created when their mother, who was Haitian, just made up the name. or said that the father was Bohemian, and I guess it, in those days no one was checking. Mm-hmm. And they're Haitian. A lot of the crimes, violence, armed robberies, rape, home invasions are because of the influx of Haitians. So we can improve our society on every level, reach out to our Bahamians, but if we continue to have this influx of Bahamians, of Haitians, Haitian Bahamians, where are we headed?
It's definitely an issue, but Bahamians are the problem too. So, you know, I don't want to...
Oh, very much so.
I don't want to throw it on the Haitians, make it sound like it's a Haitian problem. Bahamians are doing foolishness as well. And I've worked with a lot of Haitians. I've worked with a lot of Haitian gang members. In fact, some of the top hitmen in the Bahamas I work with. You know, I mean, I had a relationship with some of those guys. And I have had a few cases of success with Haitians as well. There's a young man that I know, he was with the Zopan. And today, he's married, he has a business, and he's doing well. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting people exposed to the right information, the right environment. We're going to have a problem because Haiti is a lot larger than the Bahamas. And as long as we allow or we don't do anything about the Haitian influx, there are going to be consequences.
And if we didn't have the Bahamian boat captains bringing them in, if we didn't have the Bahamians who were hiring them for below minimum wage, we didn't have the Bahamians housing them and renting to them, they wouldn't be coming in the numbers that they're coming in. So we have to look at ourselves.
And then there's another aspect of it too. And just about every Bahamian businessman that I talk to, especially in fields like construction, or landscaping and so on, they all tell me the same thing. It's universal. They tell me, if we had to depend upon Bahamians, we'd be out of business.
They'd be out of business.
Yes. Yeah. The hardest working person on any construction site, unfortunately, is rarely a Bahamian.
Yeah.
And
that's the reality. And so Bahamians need to step up. You know, I mean, if we're saying that, you know, we don't want Haitians coming and taking jobs, then we have to perform better and we have to show up. You know, I was talking with a construction owner, construction company owner, and he said to me, he said, the difference between my Haitian workers and my Bahamian workers is that my Bahamian workers will get paid, and then they don't show up for a few days. They don't call, they don't say anything. And then he said, they want to get paid, and then they don't have the skill level. You know, and that's a consistent report that I've got. So as a people, we have to decide to do better. We have to decide to live at a higher standard, and we have to, as a national exercise, encourage excellence.
Well, Pastor, you are so influential, and you have made such a positive impact on so many persons. Just I'm speaking about within the Bahamas. Have you ever thought about entering politics and having a greater power in improving the future of this country?
Well, I've been approached many times over the years. But one thing for me is that I never want to be directly involved in frontline politics while being the senior pastor of a church. I think it's polarizing, and it creates a divided loyalty. And it's difficult to exist in dual roles. So, you know, with my focus being a pastor, I've never, you know, accepted the idea that, okay, I could do both. I prefer, and I think I'm more effective in my role that I'm in now.
Because I was about to say, I'm not sure that this concept that we have that politicians are the most influential people in society, I'm not sure that's really true.
I think it's the parents and the teachers, to be truthful.
Yeah.
And I believe that we've done ourselves a disservice by drinking that Kool-Aid. And maybe we do need to get back to one of the things you mentioned, ordinary people are mentors. Mm-hmm. And some pastors can have an incredible influence if they can be heard. Mm-hmm. But you don't often get, you will get a politician get up and say something, and that's automatically put in the newspaper. Especially if they disagree with somebody.
Right.
It's automatically put in the newspaper. But you don't get what pastors say automatically mm-hmm. put in the newspaper. So again, I'm kind of ranking on the media for what they focus on, yeah. and saying that we're not going to get out of the rut until, as a society, we demand positivity. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if we're demanding positivity as a society.
Well, I tell you, one of the biggest problems is the lack of men in church and the lack of resources for churches. You know, sometimes we think about it and we act as if the church is just rolling in money and can do anything. But what I've found is that, for example, when Bahamas Faith Ministries started, we had a focus on reaching young people. And I was one of the few pastors in the Bahamas who was a full-time youth pastor. So if we say the problem is young people, but we don't have any full-time workers working with young people, then it means we are not putting the resources where the problem is. And so churches need men to be in a position to work with young people, and churches need to be in a position to have youth pastors, youth workers, specialists who can go out and do the work. Because if the only thing that happens is people come to church once a week and the church is not actually working with young people on a direct basis, then there's very little that you can accomplish.
Well, Pastor Dave Burrows is looking at the recent Bahamian history, the 1960s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now we're in the 2000s. What has happened to the nuclear family?
And that's the heart of the problem for the nation. Not only the nation, but globally. When I go back to purpose and instinct. So, you know, when you have a dog will just go about the neighborhood and he'll just jump on whatever's available, and then they get pregnant and then they have children. He never goes and say, well, you know, let me check on these children. Let me go and go in the garbage and get a box of Kentucky bones and let me carry it to these children that I made. That's where we're at in the Bahamas. We have young men having multiple children. The children are not growing up in a family. And young people need instructions. Children need instructions. Children need care. You know, my daughter just had a baby last year, and I was thinking, I looked at the environment that she's growing up in, the love she gets, and I'm thinking, you know, this is what is causing her to thrive. And then I thought about, what about those children who grow up? The mother doesn't want them. They don't have a daddy. They're not getting love. They're getting abused. What kind of young people, what kind of... are we producing as a result of this? So the nation will only really be as good as the family. And right now we have a fractured family. I mean, the family is in really bad shape.
And one of the differences I see too is that a typical young man today has no dream of having a family.
Right, because they're living without purpose. You know, and young men need to think of themselves as, when they grow up, they're going to be the head of a family. And if they are not thinking like that, then, you know, we have a society where people are living without purpose. They're living by instinct. And it just creates casualties, you know. Instead of the relationships producing a positive result that can create a legacy, so instead of producing children who will one day lead a family, you are creating casualties. You know, so a man and a woman come together, and the result of that relationship is a child who is a casualty, not a
a nation builder.
And I mean, the truth is, for us who here sitting and have loving wives and children, our greatest purpose, or one of the greatest purposes we have in our life, is being a father, is being a husband. But for so many, they never knew that. They never experienced that. They don't understand that concept. Maybe one of the greatest driving force. Why do I wake up 4 o'clock in the morning and do this and do that? Is because for my wife, for my children.
Absolutely. And that is a great incentive, you know. I mean, my life changed. When I changed my life, family became probably the most important thing in my life, you know. Serving God was important, doing all these kinds of things were important, but my family was important. And my family was so important that I made sure that I prioritized my family and my children. I remember my wife was the vice president of an insurance company here in the Bahamas. And I asked her to leave her job so that she could run my business that I had. But the other purpose for that was so that she could be with the kids. And initially, she said no because the job was paying well. But a year later, she came back to me and she said, you know what? I'm going to do this because every time there's a trip, every time there's a PTA meeting, these things, I'm busy with work. And she left the job, and it was the best decision she made in her life, because you could stay on the job and lose your children, you know. And you know, she ended up developing a great relationship with our daughter. Both of our children became very successful, no issues, no problems, and now they are raising families. So they are duplicating, you know, that model of the nuclear family, and family is the center of purpose, you know.
Well, the 1 hour has gone very quickly. Any closing remarks, Dr. Pastor Dave Burrows?
I just want to say to the Bahamas in general that we have to consider whether we want to live by purpose or instinct. And in order for us to be better, we have to demonstrate better. We can't just say it. And I think we have to make sure that we prioritize the things that God set up priorities. You know, you mentioned simple things like love your neighbors yourself, you know, and not get caught up in material pursuits, because, you know, we see policemen, we see all kind of people going to jail, losing their life, losing their families, because they are prioritizing things over the things that really matter. And so I think we have to get back to family values. We have to get back to not just being a nominal Christian nation, but actually practicing Christian values, and it'll make a difference. That's what our forefathers said. You know, they said, look, this nation is going to be successful if it follows Christian values.
And Dr. Ian Fernandez, closing remarks?
Yeah, I just want to echo Pastor Dave's sentiment about instinct and purpose. In fact, I'd put it this way. If we do have an instinct, I think that instinct is to have a purpose. And when you are purposeless, you actually feel divorced from life. I like to tell people, if you are purposeless, you are walking towards your death. It's almost like being in a room where the oxygen starts to get sucked out. You're walking towards your death. If you're on a boat without water, even if you're on the ocean, you are walking towards your death. And being purposeless is in that category. Mm-hmm. You are walking towards your death. It's that important. So.
Very well said. And my last remarks, Bahamas, never give anybody the power to dictate the circumstances or outcome of your life. Persons can treat you as badly as they want to, but never stoop to their level. Whenever you try to fight evil people with evil, in return, you will always lose. Evil people will always beat you with experience. You can't out-evil evil people. Maintain your moral compass. Stay steadfast to your values. Hold on to your goodness. In the end, evil people will never prosper. They will pay either in this life or in the next. Matthew 6:8, we don't pray to inform God, we pray to involve God. God always knows what's going on in your life. He is waiting for you to ask for his help. Pastor Dave Burrows, please, I want this to be an ongoing series. You have so many persons that you can reach out to in a wonderful way. Let's see you again. I know you have a very busy schedule, but you have an open invitation. And thank you, Dr. Ian Fernanda, for your wonderful input and your inspiring words as well. Be safe, Bahamas, and have a good week. This is Urologist Speaks.
Thank you. It's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist. You will find he'll help you solve your problems on 96.9. Yeah. I'm telling you, with early detection comes early prevention. But letting your parents